was in the next room in the kitchen, and she spoke up, and she said, "Is that Night Stalker?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "What's it doing on at this hour?" And I said, "Svengoolie is showing the first movie." And from the other room, she said, "I thought it sounded familiar. That's a good one." So she has watched this particular TV movie in some aspect in the past without me, which is fine. It aired in 72, and I remember the ads for it, the TV ads and the TV guide. I don't remember anything on TV, but I would have been in high school, and I remember, I don't want to say that it hit with a big splash, but I was not terribly surprised to hear that they were making a continuing series of it. But according to Svengoolie, they were, ABC was embarrassed to discover that this was the most watched made-for-TV movie yet, and that they had a hit on their hands despite themselves, and so therefore they ordered a second movie. And based on its popularity, Darren McGavin, his own production company, and launched with a series which did one season, and then Freddie Silverman came on and said, "I'm canceling this. I don't like science fiction." Science fiction.
Well, a lot of it had to do with Darren McGavin wasn't happy with the direction the show was going. Hello and welcome to Cocktails and Comics. I am Tim Elliott, and I am joined this episode by Kirk Greenfield.
Hello.
And Nigel Spink.
Hello.
And it is evening for Kirk and I. It is morning for Nigel. So I hope he's not enjoying a cocktail because it's early in the morning.
No.
Is it Sunday morning in Japan?
It is, yes.
Mm. How's the weather? I need to know. I need to make a forecast. Well, is tomorrow good?
It's still too damned hot.
Oh, okay.
But it's raining today.
Oh.
We had quite a heavy rain during the night. And it's been raining on and off a little bit this morning. It's fine at the moment, but cloudy. Okay. Yeah, but I think we might get more rain later, but it's still too damned hot.
Yeah. That sounds like a song for a musical in South Pacific. I think the song is called, "We're Having a Heat Wave, It's Too Damn Hot," something like that.
There's a song called "We're Having a Heat Wave."
That's it.
Yeah, there is,
I can say this once, and then I'll let it go, because I'm sick to death of hearing it, and I'm sure that y'all don't want to hear it. But we are in the middle of a heat wave in the Midwest, and an exceptional drought. That is the highest level of drought categories possible here in Southeast Ohio. And it has expanded each week to a larger and larger footprint, to the extent where they have banned all outdoor open flame. That includes sparklers, campfires, burning barrels, ceremonial fires, cooking fires, cigarettes, everything. And if you get caught, they'll send the fire department and bill you for the run, and they'll prosecute you if they determine it was a malicious act on your part to start the fire. They're not messing around. Everything's brown. All the grass is brown. The reservoirs are down. We are in serious trouble until the rain comes. That's why I wanted Nigel to tell me what tomorrow was going to bring, because we could really use some rain. And according to my last podcast, it ain't coming here until Monday or Tuesday of next week. After something like 19 days or longer without any rainfall.
We've been in a drought, I think. That's Nevada. This area has been in a drought for about 20 years.
I'm one to talk.
That's right. It's actually cool here. It was only 80, high of 86 yesterday, and I think we went camping Thursday night and at the lake, and it was a high of about 85. It was nice. It was kind of cool. You know, you need kind of a sweatshirt at nighttime. But it's supposed to get a little hotter. I think it's supposed to be later in the week. It's supposed to be closer to 100. But And our tree in our front yard, I think, has died. So we've contacted the rental company. I think they're going to come out and replace it.
That's a shame.
Which interrupts my Halloween setting. That's what I was doing all day today was working on Halloween, and I have to set it next week. And
well,
if
you have a tree, you know, that would fit in.
Well, it works. I just don't want to set a bunch of stuff if they come in, then have to grind, cut a tree up and then grind it down. So most of the stuff I was working on today was for porch stuff. I was putting LED lights in my Reaper and a couple of skulls. So I ordered some cheap LED lights from Amazon. I wired them in. And I built some fake fences. So I worked literally on Halloween all day today.
Speaking of which, I heard something unusual this week. Somebody was talking about where they ordered various electronic parts from. And to my great surprise, they did not say an electronic supplier. And so I was expecting they were going to say Amazon, except the person said AliExpress, A-L-I Express, which they described as just like Amazon, but without the cost. They're saying if you like paying money, Amazon is fine. AliExpress can get it for you cheaper. I've never heard anything from there, but for what it's worth, that's what I just heard this week. And so I kind of took a look, and there were a bunch of things like, oh, and you can get 20 for a price of this, or you can get 6 of these instead of just one, or, you know, everything seems to be in groupings and lots. If you want more than one, they'll give you a favorable discount on that and shipping, or, you know, that's just for what it's worth. I'm not sure, Nigel, you don't need to know all this, but.
we used to have you ever gone to Fry's Electronics, Kirk?
Fry's? No.
Fry's. It's a big electronic place. There's one here in Vegas, but it closed during COVID and never opened up again. I think the rest of them, I think the whole company is out of business, but it was, if you wanted anything like you wanted computer-wise, if you had to build your own computer, you could go and buy all this stuff from Fry's. You wouldn't have to get it from Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Got it. Well, what did I do today? I slept in. I got up. I went to a ham radio swap meet that was closing early because of the heat. So I got there, and 10 minutes later, everybody was packing up. They did the grand prize drawing, and they all left. And I got to tell you, I was pretty PO'd about it. But because they all recognized me as a public figure, I couldn't express my outrage. I had to just smile and say, oh, gosh, I thought you were going to stay longer because you advertised you're going to stay till 3 o'clock, and it's only 1:15. So, you know, that was frustrating.
That's the price you pay for being famous, Kirk.
It's the price I paid for not getting up earlier and getting underway. My daughter just flew back from Long Island. My wife went up to Columbus and picked her up from the airport. She wasn't supposed to get in until like 2:30 or something like that. And as it turns out, the flight came in something like 20 minutes early, mind you, and departed LaGuardia 10 minutes early. Now, I ask you, how can a plane depart 10 minutes before it's scheduled? That doesn't make sense to me. But at any rate, she got into Columbus earlier, and my wife got there bang on the dime as she was walking up to the baggage claim to claim my daughter. She was getting a text from her saying, we're on the ground, we're departing or deplaning. So, you know, it worked out.
I've never heard of a plane leaving early.
I was very surprised. I was looking online at a description to make sure that the flight had gone, because I didn't go with her. Instead, I went, you know, she wanted to go on her own. They wanted to have a girls' event, so they, you know, they did their thing, didn't take Dad along. So did my own thing.
That's too bad. You could have visited Paul.
In Columbus? No.
Long Island. I was thinking Long Island.
Well, you know, when she spent a year in Newark, New Jersey, working for AmeriCorps, at the time that the freaks were gathering at, I think it was Darren or Daryl, I can't remember his name, who was doing a barbecue. And they were
Dario.
Playing it. Yes.
Yeah.
And I was encouraging her to, hey, if you go into the city, you know, why don't you contact these guys? You do a podcast with me. They do podcasts. I'm sure they would welcome another podcaster, and you can make print. And I thought to myself, you know, this is really stupid. She's going into the Big Apple. She doesn't know anybody. She doesn't know their reputations or their personalities. This is not going to work. And so she never did. I never, you know, pushed her or encouraged her, but it occurred to me she was right there within, I don't know, 10 miles of where they were having their barbecue. And I'm guessing, I really don't know. I would have moved heaven and earth to have gotten there, but
that was
for her to have shown up and say, hi, I'm the girl that my father ordered for your party. You know,
that wouldn't have worked out very well. But yeah, that was I think not Jekyll Con. It was a little con they had at a airplane museum somewhere in Long Island that we all went to. I think the con only went on 2 or 3 years, but it was probably the biggest collection we had, because it was, of course, Paul and Scott and Dr. Bill came up, and I think his son might have come up. David Weider was there. I was there with my wife, and one of the guys from, did you ever listen to Scott Reifen's show that they did for a while called Dinner for Geeks?
I don't recall. I might have, but
it hasn't been on in several years. It was basically them going out to dinner, and they just set the recorder on, and it was just talked about whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the guys on that show, who lives in Georgia, where Scott lives, drove up.
Yeah.
To New York, drove. And he showed up there. And Chris Honeywell was there, because he came down. Right. It was a blast. I mean, anytime we can get that many freaks together. It was kind of like the one we had in Orlando a couple years later.
See, that's what I was trying to get her involved in, but nope, she's her own creature, so.
Well, she's got to go her own way.
Maybe we'll get Nigel to come sometime. We'll see.
Maybe you will.
That would be, or
if, I've been thinking about it, yeah, but.
Really? Hey, if you do come to this side of the pond, you give us plenty of advance notice so we can we can't get a gathering or something.
I know, that's the thing, yeah. I'm either hoping that one of you guys will sort of say that they're organizing something and give us all plenty of notice, or
if I decide
to come. And I see, what I don't know, like you say, you get together occasionally and you go to comic conventions.
Yeah.
If there was a particularly good convention that was going on, if I had plenty of forward notice that it was happening, so that I could arrange things, flights and what have you, and timing and everything, I might be persuaded to actually try and get across.
John just said tonight that he just came back from Europe. I think he said
it. Yeah, he's queuing for San Diego Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con's a bit too big, I think. Yeah.
That's the Mecca.
But
that one's damn hard to get. That one's damn hard to get tickets for, though. It's almost impossible to get tickets.
I think that one would be a bit too crazy. Yeah.
Well, I lived in LA for 1 year, and I believe that I went to San Diego Con 2 years in a row. Flew down from Salt Lake City once, and then.
Yep.
And then drove down through Huntington Beach, suburb of LA, 1 year. And my wife went with me the second year with a piece of stained glass She had two of them. One was a close-up of the Thing's face from the final panel of Fantastic Four 55. If you ever look at it, you'll recognize it. A stained glass piece, mind you. And the other one was the was a Spider-Man pose from the cover of Spider-Man 38 that was huge and wouldn't stay together as she finished it. She worked like night and day for the week prior to the convention, and then discovered that it wouldn't hold up without some additional support, like angle iron sweat soldered into the back. Anyways, she took them both down to the San Diego Comic-Con and displayed them. And sure enough, one of the Marvel creators came by and went, "That's Ditko. I'll buy it. How much do you want for it?"
Cool.
You know, she sold it. I don't know how much it was, if she was pricing it by the piece, but I think he got a bargain, but I don't know if the Thing would have held up to the rigors of being held in the sun, you know, for years. Anyway, sorry.
If you ever do if we ever do a, most cons are kind of happenstance. I mean, not cons, but get-togethers. It just happens that like the one we did in Orlando, I went down for Star Wars Celebration, so I got together with, and Scott knew I was going there, so for some reason Michael Bailey and his wife were there visiting Disney. So Scott got us into Disney, and we did that. And it just so happens that Andy Leyland from the UK was there going to Disney, and Gene Hendricks was there going to Disney. So we all met at Disney Springs the day of the con, like a Friday. And then all the folks that are in Florida, like Bill came up, Shag, who lives somewhere in Florida, he came up, John Wilson. So anybody that was close came up. So we had probably 20 guys there, and that was just a coincidence. You know, the fact that I got to meet Andy Leyland, that was great. But there is a, and it, sometimes they'll get together because Paul will come down and go to Disney, and they'll meet up then. Of course, Dr. Bill's close by anyway. But there's a big con that I went to this year called MegaCon. It's in February in Orlando, and it's huge. It's actually had a larger attendance than San Diego Comic-Con. And I went there, that's because Critical Drinker was there. That's the reason why I went. He was there, and Gary from Nerdrotic was there, so I wanted to meet those guys.
I don't understand. What's Critical Drinker?
He's a YouTube personality. He does movie reviews.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Nerdrotic. I think you've commented on Nerdrotic. I think you know who that is.
Say it again.
Nerdrotic.
It's not ringing bells.
It's another YouTube show. He just covers pop culture. So they were both there, so I went in to see them. And I met Scott, and Dr. Bill was there. So we went to the con one day and looked around, and it was pretty good shopping for comic books. It was not a lot of creators. I got something from Art Adams, and Jim Shooter was there. I got some autograph from him, and a couple other big names. Mike Grell was there. A lot of new people that I didn't, you know, I'm not following all these new folks.
If Kirby and Ditko and Wally Wood weren't there, I'm sorry, I'm not attending.
I don't know if Ditko ever. I mean, I got the chance to meet Kirby once at a Dallas con that he was there, and Stan Lee were both there. They were not at the same table. Stan Lee was in his own room. Kirby was just in the dealer's room at his own little table. This is Jack Kirby at his own little table. He had a long line. And he was doing autographs, and I got him to autograph one of my X-Men, but I couldn't afford an original. So he autographed, a reprint of X-Men number 10. That was an Astonishing Tales or something. It was a reprint. Yeah. So that's the only Kirby I could get. But I don't think I never saw Ditko at a con.
No, he was notoriously reclusive and really turned his back on Marvel and didn't want to play those games at all. Mm-hmm.
No.
Did I ever tell you I met Stan Lee at a Chicago con?
Hmm.
There was a, I can't get the year right. I'd have to really struggle. But it was something like 87 or 88, maybe 86. The Chicago con was at the O'Hare Airport at a Hilton, I think it was, just adjacent to the airport. So it was easy to come in via train, via plane, via jet, or expressway. Anyway, we drove over from Detroit. Yes, this was during the period when I was interviewing people in the Detroit comic scene. Anyways, we went over there, didn't realize it, but we were in line in a small room to meet, what's his name? The guy who took over as the editor-in-chief. I'm drawing a blank right now, but at any rate, he was holding a small group session regarding Marvel and their plans. And so we were there, and then they said, okay, guys, we got to end this panel earlier. We need the room. Stan wants to meet him. And I can't think of the name. I'm just drawing a blank. Anyway, so an entourage of, you know, six people or so, kind of everybody left courteously, and I stayed where I was because nobody told me to get out. And so I just acted like I belonged. And so the six people kind of ushered in Stan, who came in, and the two had never met before, which really kind of surprised me, but they wanted to have a conversation. And so they kind of went to the other end of this small room, and, you know, we stayed at our end of the room and let them have their moment together. And so I strained my ears, and basically the conversation that I heard was Stan telling him, yeah, that's why I always thought Daredevil number 7 was so good. You know, the one where Submariner and Daredevil meet, and no matter which hero you were following, they were, you know, you could back either guy and you would understand their motives, and the reader would understand why they're in conflict. So they come together, they fight, and then as the thing resolves, you know, it's not a clear-cut defeat, but on the other hand, both have a grudging respect for each other. He says, it's the best comic I think we ever put out, and it's the quintessential how the heroes should meet. And so he was passing that nugget of information to the new editor-in-chief, who was smart enough to say, ah, I see, thank you. And so they had their conversation, and, you know, I eavesdropped just enough to hear that. It's not the first, not the only time that Stan ever praised that particular issue, but I was present to hear that, and I understood what he was saying because I owned a copy of it. I knew the story. So as they were leaving, oh, we got to go to other meetings, what have you, and he came by, so to speak. He kind of looked at the people who were left in the crowd, scanning the faces to see if there was anybody he was supposed to interact with or would recognize. And so when his eyes locked with mine, I stepped forward and reached out my hand and say, you know, Stan, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate what you wrote in the 60s, how much it meant to me, and my vocabulary is in no small part due to your wordsmithing. And just as I stepped forward to shake his hand, you could see the entourage start to close ranks to intercede, to yep. block me off. But Stan turned, and he squared right in front of me and took my hand, and he said, oh, thank you very much. So I shook his hand. I said, I certainly appreciate it. You meant so much to so many of us of my generation. And then I stepped back, and he exited the room, and, you know, the entourage went on. But it was like, it was a real dicey thing. It was a real close call, whether they were going to call security or whether they were going to say, "Step, hey, buddy," you know. It just worked really well, and I knew I only had a few seconds to say whatever I was going to say to him. So
that's
my story.
That's the, yeah, when I met him, I was just in line getting some signs, so I was just a face in the line, and, you know, there were people. That was back when they wouldn't really limit how many comics you bring in. There were people that had just stacks of stuff to have him sign. And it's like, no, bring up 3 or 4 issues at the most, get something signed. But
only thing that I ever had signed was I got a copy of the Marvel Masterworks collection that included the Phoenix Saga, the Dark Phoenix Saga. And I brought it up to John Byrne. and opened it up to him and asked him, told him how much the story meant to me and how pleased I was that it was collected in one spot. And so he signed the inside title page, I think it was. Nothing spectacular, no personal dedication, just his flourish, his signature, or maybe it says, glad you liked it or something. It's the only thing I've ever had signed. And so I said, thank you, and closed it and went off my merry way. And then the guy behind me had like 20 books.
Yeah, so, and that's why I think some, and I don't blame them, would start charging for signatures to keep, to weed out some of those folks that would just come up. Because it's a difference between, if you're signing it because you truly appreciate the person you're seeing, it's one thing. Some of these guys are just signing it so they can go and sell it. Because when I went and saw Byrne, I think the first time I saw him in Boston, and he had his table, and he wasn't signing yet, but he was at his table. So I kind of went up to him, and I was wearing my Third Degree Burn shirt, and I told him, and I think I got kind of a cold reception. Just, oh, you do a podcast on me. Okay, well, you know, go away, kid. But I was asking him about, and I bought a page from him. But I was, when we were doing, they said, okay, come back, you know, 3 o'clock and he'll do signatures. And that's when I was going to try to get a sound bite from him for the show. And he kind of said, yeah, I'll do it. But I couldn't get him to do it in line when I was getting my signature because he didn't want to slow the line down. And I got the impression he didn't really want to do it. So I never pursued it after that. I didn't bug him with it anymore. But people would come up and ask if they could get an authentication proving that that was John Byrne's signature, and his handler and John both said, no, they don't do that. You know, they're not there just to verify his signature so you can run off and sell it on eBay. So that's, you know, I never got anything signed thinking I was going to sell it. It was more about, I want to get, and I got more of a kick out of getting stuff from him signed. Like in Dallas, I got him to sign some of his old Space 1999 books. He got a kick out of that when he saw those old issues and he was signing them.
Which reminds me, we just passed Breakaway Day, didn't we?
We did. Mm. 13th. Yeah. Were you...
not on the course, but 25 years ago, was it?
Oh, 25, yeah. Were you... growing up in the UK, were you a Gerry Anderson fan, Nigel?
I was, yeah. But I wasn't a big fan of Space 1999. I watched some of the episodes, you know, when they were first on TV. But I wasn't a big fan of that. I preferred UFO.
Oh, I love UFO.
Space 1999. And of course, going back to like when I was even younger, I used to really like all the puppet
Thunderbirds, you know,
shows. Yeah, I started with, I think the first one that I can really remember anything, because I'd only be young, was Fireball XL5. And then Stingray, then Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet. That was probably my favorite. Captain Scarlet was my favorite in terms of the idea behind it. But I wish they'd have had longer episodes. Like Thunderbirds episodes were about 45 minutes long. But Captain Scarlet ones were only like the usual about 25, 26 minutes. So the stories always seem to be a bit rushed for me. I would have liked to have seen the Captain Scarlet done with the longer episodes like Thunderbirds.
Captain Scarlet was a little dark for a kid's show.
Yeah,
it was
pretty
mature.
But, yeah, the other thing I liked about that was they sort of updated the look of the puppets and everything for Captain Scarlet, made him more lifelike.
Well, they went... The story behind that is when the electronics improved to a point where they could put smaller motors in the head to control the eyes and the mouth. Then they could do the more proportioned puppets, which you saw in
Captain Scarlet. Yeah, because they all had like big heads before, didn't they? Or like really large features, you know, big lips or big eyes or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I loved watching those as a kid. Yeah. And I used to read TV 21, which was a comic that it had all the stories of those Gerry Anderson
stuff.
Stuff in it. Yeah. It had Fireball and Stingray and Thunderbirds and then Captain Scarlet when that came out and so on and so on.
Supercar.
I vaguely remember that. I was a bit young still. My sister used to watch Supercar, and before that, Four Feather Falls.
Oh, that was the Western, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was a cowboy show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't really remember
that, except that I knew my sister liked that one.
Did you ever watch Joe 90?
Yes. Yeah.
That one is just kind of it's got a goofy premise, but it was it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched Joe 90. That's about probably the last one I did see from the Puppets shows. They did another one after that, I think called something like Secret Organization, but I never saw it on TV.
That was the one that mixed, I think, live action with puppets. It was I know what you're talking about. It was a secret organization or a spy, and he was dressed as a clergy, or he worked with a clergy, or something. Didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went into, of course, he went into UFO.
Yeah,
and then,
UFO.
Of course, Space 1999 is a failed second or third season of UFO. Because, you know, they had the moon base in UFO.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And that's what was going to happen with Space 1999. And they UFO never got renewed. So they just kind of took that concept and just turned it into Space 1999 with with a Mission Impossible pair, or what, Barbara Bain and Martin Landau.
Martin Landau, yeah.
I barely remember Supercar as well. But what I do remember is only the payoff of one particular episode where the main character, whose name I don't remember, is something like Steve something.
Mike Mercury. Mike Mercury, I believe.
Flew the car that could do just about anything, go underwater, go through the air. I remember the payoff at the end is he's chasing the black sedan that has Master Spy in it. A very heavy, eyebrowed, bald man that clearly was supposed to be Russian. And he swoops down closer and closer to the roof of the car, and the undercar magnetic, whatever you want to call it, magnet, energizes and attaches to the top of the car, and then Supercar lifts off and flies him away through the skies to the top of the Empire State Building, which is... You know, it's nothing but a dirigible mast, you know, a Zeppelin mast. There is no landing pad there. So they would have you think when he positions the car at the top of the mast and balances it right on the top of the mast, then releases the magnet, the car is tipping forward and then backward. And so you had whatever the assistant was, the toady who's working for Master Spy, he's like, no, lean forward, Master Spy. No, lean backward, Master Spy. And that's the payoff, the scene that I remember, just, you know, so ridiculous, backwards and forwards, and clearly they're going to fall to their death, but they would never do such a thing on a kid's show. Mm-hmm. And Supercar flies off into the sunset. That's the only thing I remember from that show.
That's what I liked about Captain Scarlet, because it was, like I said, it was dark. It was, people died. I mean, the opening episode is when Captain Scarlet himself dies and is brought back, but something goes wrong. So he's not like a zombie.
He's not under the
control of the Mysterians.
The Mysterons. Yeah.
Mysterons. And the tech, all the Gerry Anderson stuff had such wonderful tech in it, especially Thunderbirds. Mm-hmm. I love the stuff in UFO, even Space 1999, all the model work. And a lot of that was done by Derek Medding, who went on and worked on a lot of the big Bond films. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed those, the Gerry Anderson stuff. Yeah.
Our misspent youth.
Well, that was hard. I never watched much of Space 1999 because I could never know when it was coming on. It had a weird rotation. Same with Speed Racer. I love Speed Racer, but I could never find when it was going to come on. You just happen across it and you'd watch it. Mm-hmm. Same with the Star Trek animated film or Star Trek animated show.
So,
That would just pop up occasionally.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those, but that's all, only about five, something like that.
Well, there's like only 22 or so of them.
Yeah, there's not many.
A handful, maybe three or five, that are considered to be especially good. These days, I understand they're all considered to be in canon.
I believe so.
There's only five that really, you would really care to watch. One is A Tale of Spock's Youth, when his pet teddy bear dies, or how it dies. That's one. The Infinite Vulcan, I believe, is one where he grows to incredible size. There's another
one
where
that one was written by Walter Koenig.
That's why it was important. There's one where the women take over, where all the men are like being held captive or are trapped in a giant bell jar or something on a planet. And the women literally fly the Enterprise and have to come rescue them. So it's a time for Nurse Chapel and Uhura, and I don't remember who else they had on that anime show, but the women have their day. And that's
well, there's the Slaver Weapon is a pretty good one too, because I think that's written by Larry Niven. There's some good shows, because it wasn't a kid show. It was a little more, I would say it was for a little bit younger audience than the original series was, but it wasn't written as a kiddie cartoon. They took itself pretty serious.
And they could do anything that they wouldn't have been able to do because of budget in the live action show. If you want to show a giant amoeba that was crawling up the side of the Empire State Building, you could do it. If you want,
well, they introduced the force field belts, so they could. It was like their way of having an atmosphere suit. They could go out in space, or they could go out at some place that didn't have a breathable atmosphere, and they just had these glowing force fields around them that protected them.
So it really freed them up.
Anyway. Yeah, well, it introduced Mr. Erickson, the three-legged, three-armed guy.
Yeah, that was a pretty bizarre concept.
Who I think shows up in one of the J.J. Abrams films. I think.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
Well, the latest word on the Star Trek movie, is it on again or off again? I don't know.
I hear different. Still at Star Trek 4, I hear it's I hear lots of different stories. I hear that I know the cast would like to do it, but they're going to age out of it pretty quick. And one of them, Yeltsin is no longer with us.
Right.
I've heard lots of rumors that Tarantino wanted to do one. I don't think there's anything to that.
Well, he was involved, but he's not attached now.
Right.
So that is not a valid. It's not a going concern, but I understand at one point it was very much a possibility that it was. It was something that was being actively considered and planned on, but it felt like so many other things. So,
well, they seem to be pursuing TV, because there is the Starfleet Academy show that's coming out that will kind of replace Discovery. That's going to be in the same time frame as Discovery, and it's going to feature Tilly and Because, you know, she went back to Starfleet as an instructor. So it's going to be a bunch of young cadets.
Out of space.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be 90210 in outer space is what it's going to be.
Oh, God. Please.
And we do still have the oh, gosh, what is it? Department 31 or Sector 31, whatever they call themselves. The super secret. There's going to be a made-for-TV movie on that. It's not going to be a film. It's not going to be a series, but it's going to be a film. And
speaking of major films that are coming out, we are about a week away from the initial release of Saturday Night Movie that documents the earliest season of Saturday Night Live. Oh. With the original cast and production people. And apparently it's a tell-all story about how it came to be, how it almost didn't come to be, the problems, the attitudes, the egos, and how it actually got on the air. And apparently it was right up to the last minute, like 10 minutes before air, that people were pushing or lobbying Lorne Michaels, saying, "Lorne, we're not ready yet. There's no shame. Don't do this. Let's just air the dress rehearsal from last night. We've got the tape. We can run that instead." And I don't know how it plays out, but obviously he said, "No, it's a live show. We do it live. If we fail, we fail. If we succeed, we succeed, and we build on our success." So we'll see. The new season, by the way, of Saturday Night Live begins in approximately 35 minutes, so I'm going to bail at that point.
Oh, no, I'm okay. Sorry. I think we'll probably wrap.
25 minutes. It started. It's already on. So I'm going to give you another 20 minutes, and then I'm going to go watch Weekend Update. So
okay. I think we can wrap this up in 20 minutes. You know, this is, again, there was no schedule for this. There was no topics. We're just going to, just fun to get together. And you don't feel like you have to analyze anything. You're just talking about stuff. You know, you don't have to.
Yeah.
About anything.
So, talking of something else then quickly, are you watching the Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power?
I started the first episode. I haven't got through it. I need to get caught up, but right. I haven't. Okay. I did watch it last. I watched the other season.
Yeah,
I haven't watched this season. One. Yeah.
Right.
What did you...
I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I mean, there's been six episodes dropped now, and it's only an eight episode season, so it's nearly finished the second season. I'm enjoying it. I mean, I thought it took a lot of stick, especially after that first season. People were all criticizing how it wasn't, you know, things weren't right like this and stuff like that. But I don't know. I enjoyed the first season. It was a bit, there were one or two things in it that I thought, was that really necessary? But some of those things, actually, now that I'm watching season two, they're all sort of connecting. It's coming together more.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of following it more closely, and I'm sort of referencing things from, I'm getting out the Silmarillion all the time and the appendices from the Lord of the Rings and stuff like that to check on characters and events and what's supposedly happening and what they might be making up, as it were, to fill, you know, to fill the story out.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good. It's pretty accurate. Yeah, they've introduced one or two characters which, yes, don't actually exist in the books, as it were. But you know, it's okay. They don't spoil anything. So it seems to be doing a pretty good job. Because some of the stuff that they're having the characters do. There's no like real record that they did these things or not, so it's okay. You know, you could imagine, well, yeah, all right, it says during a certain period in time, this character maybe did this or went there or did that. But there's no actual details. So for them to actually give us something, as it were, and say, well, this character's doing this, nobody can really say, well, they didn't do that, because there's no proof either way. Do you know what I mean?
Which I've, and that's kind of my thought in the first season when it was okay. So, I'm not so deeply invested in Tolkien that if they get something wrong, it's going to really rub me the wrong way.
So long as they get it right when they need to, like if a character did do a certain thing, then make sure that they show it. Or like when a character dies, of course, they've got to be killed off or whatever. Yeah. I'm enjoying it. I was saying there's two episodes left to go. They're building up to a big battle.
Yeah, I think it was going to be four seasons. I think they've kind of committed to.
Oh, that's good then. Because,
at least four. You know,
we're talking with somebody else the other day, and they thought there was only going to be one more after this. And I thought, oh, that's going to be a bit hard to get everything in that's still got to happen then. But
I don't know.
But if they are doing four or five, that's good.
I thought that's what they had said. They were committed to that much. That all I know is people that when I listen to reviews or watch reviews on it, who are more heavily invested in it, and I see their reaction. And I know a lot of the problems they have is that they don't have the rights to the book. They have just the Silmarillion and the appendices. So there's certain things they can't use. So they kind of use it and use characters that are like that, but they can't call a certain character a certain character. They have to, do the best they can because they don't have the rights to it. But yeah, it's not like when I watch some, for instance, Discovery or Strange New Worlds, and that will really rub me the wrong way when they get something wrong. Because I'm more invested in Star Trek. That I'll pick apart because I'm much more involved in that than I am, or even Star Wars, that kind of stuff. So
I've never seen any of those, Discovery or Strange New Worlds.
Same here. I've not seen them either.
So I can't comment. But I mean, I don't like the new Star Trek films that came out. I watched the first one. I went to see the first one, expecting to sort of rip it apart, and I was a little bit surprised at how well they did on that. I wasn't expecting that to be so good, but I've never seen any of the others since.
There's four, there's five seasons of Discovery. There's two Strange New Worlds. There's three coming up. I think it's just going to start here quickly.
Yeah.
And of course there's Lower Decks, which is the animated.
Yeah. I'm not bothered about cartoony bit. what was I going to say about Strange New World? Oh yeah. What was it showing on? When it was on Strange New World,
it's on,
what was the
Paramount Plus,
right? Which I
Paramount,
can't, yeah,
you can't get that.
I'm going to say the only reason I've not seen it is because I can't get it. Otherwise, I would have watched that because I wanted to. It's not on anything it's not on Prime or Disney
No, it's not on Disney.
So until it comes onto something that Netflix or whatever, until it comes onto one of those, I can't see it.
Can you not just go to on your computer and go to Paramount.com and sign up and watch it that way? Is that
never
not allowed?
To that, actually. I don't know. Maybe
I watch it on my TV because I can get it through my Apple TV.
Yeah.
But you could watch it, or you can watch it this way, probably. If you can get there's a channel called Pluto TV. Kirk may know about it. And it's free. And it has ads. But and you could probably just go to PlutoTV.com. They have a Star Trek. They've got three Star Trek channels. And they will show, one, they show the original series, DS9, Voyager, all the time. They just rotate them around. And they will also show Strange New Worlds and Discovery. Now, you won't get to see like the latest episode, but you can catch up on the old seasons. And I don't know I don't know if you, when you,
well, yeah.
How do you, when, on your TV, do you watch, like, how do you watch your Netflix? Do you have a streaming box, like a Roku box or an Apple TV, or how do you watch it through your TV?
Yeah, we've got a Fire Stick.
Okay. Kind of. Fire Stick probably has, I bet you could find Pluto on the Fire Stick. And they've and it's all free, and you get to watch ads. It's got commercials. But it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to sign up for anything. And they've got probably 500 channels of just different stuff. It's got, sci-fi, crime, romance, old stuff. You know, I kind of like what Kirk's been watching on Svengali or Svengali, which is check it out. Yeah, I watch it all the time. I watch it probably more than I do
Pluto
Netflix.
TV.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have a look.
Speaking of spooky and Halloween, I want to change the topic for a little bit here. Have either of you heard of a Disney Plus series called It Was Always Agatha or All About Agatha?
Agatha All Along.
Agatha All Along.
Yeah, it just started. I think it started last weekend.
How many episodes are there supposed to be?
Maybe 8.
I've not seen any of them.
I haven't either.
I will probably watch one either later tonight or, it's a springboard off from WandaVision with the character, and I don't know exactly how they're going to play it, but it's clearly positioned to take advantage of Halloween.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know exactly where it's going.
I don't know anything about it. I didn't particularly want to. Huge fan of WandaVision. Last thing I think I watched on Disney was The Acolyte.
You're saying that you did not watch WandaVision?
I watched it. I wasn't particularly a fan of it. I thought it started out pretty interestingly, but then I didn't like the way it ended. I thought that it was, and I didn't particularly like the fact that they made Agatha, because it's Agatha Harkness, instead of making her a wizened old. Witch. She's a rather young woman.
We will just see. I don't know how this is going to pay off, but, they have already pulled reverses and reveals on us before in that series, and we may have been shown that she was a young woman, and we may see.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, we don't know. It could be some kind of an illusion or something that she puts on.
We did sort of a review of Werewolf by Night a couple of years ago, right?
We did, 2 years ago, I think, when it came out.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any more of those specials or, half hour or an hour specials?
They have not. They haven't been any more. You think they would do something this year, but that was one and done. What?
Remember that? Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, they did that. Yeah, that was a tie-in with the films, and it was the Kevin Bacon thing. I watched parts of it.
That works surprisingly well. It's a good one. It's enjoyable, lighthearted, and it pays off at the end. And you feel, it's a Christmas lighthearted, gift to the fans. And I like that. But I haven't heard of anything else that's been coming out. I thought they were going to be doing these on a regular basis for each one of the holidays or something. But
no, I guess it depends on how well that was received. I don't know how well Werewolf by Night. I didn't particularly like it, but because I think you like the werewolf design. And but I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting. They could do, you know, I guess the next big, well, the next big film would be FF. I know they've cast that.
Nigel, have you seen this Werewolf by Night special?
Yes, yeah, I've seen it. In color, too.
Yes.
They did it in color later on, yeah. I've seen both versions, yeah. Yeah.
Really? Because I thought it was black and white except for a couple of color accents.
No, they released it later in color.
Yeah, they did.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that.
And you can watch both. I think you can watch both options on Disney right now.
Yeah, you can.
Do you think it works in color?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was good in black and white, but it's also nice to watch in color. It's different, and I don't think they did a bad job at all.
Interesting.
Still got atmosphere.
I thought the use of color, particularly red, was extremely effective to rivet your attention.
That was about the Bloodstone, because they were talking about the Bloodstone.
Yeah, it was the Bloodstone, and it was Sister's eyes, and
man things.
Like something else. I can't remember. Was the last scene in color when they're out in the forest in the greenery? I can't remember.
I can't remember either. I've only seen it once.
Yeah. Well, it's worth rewatching again. We're coming up on Halloween. Maybe we'll watch it a second time. And again,
that's what we've been doing. We've been watching, last couple of weeks, we've been watching, just picking scary movies and watching them.
But the next big Marvel film is, I think, is Captain America. Well, that's the next one I'm looking forward to.
That's right.
The Captain America one.
New World
Order. Brave New World, is it?
Yeah.
Brave New World, New World Order, Red Hulk. Something like that.
I was going to tell you, I was not pleased with the last one. I can't think of what exactly. I think it was Doctor Strange.
Multiverse of Madness.
That one really put me off. I'm glad that I saw it. And, I got the arc that they were working with a new young lady, a new character, and Doctor Strange had some things to learn, and they had to have Wanda play the reluctant villain or villainess. Mm. And that comes to an end. But, it's like, I really wish they hadn't gone as far as they did with Wanda being the big bad.
Yeah, me too.
Because ultimately they had to erase her.
She's coming back. She's coming back in maybe the new Captain America movie. I know she's going to make a comeback in some film or TV show. I don't think she's going to be in Agatha. But she's going to come back in something. And of course, there's the Thunderbolts film. I think that comes after Captain America.
Thunderbolts.
I saw some promo image photos of that. Then I don't know what after that is. There's a that's going to be kind of the, or there's going to be another Avengers film.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to be called.
It was going to be something to do with Kang, but it's not now, is it?
Not now, no.
And then the one after that, Secret Wars.
I'm not convinced it's that true.
Robert Downey Jr. is in fact going to be
Doom.
Dr. Doom. He's going to be in two films. Yeah, he'll be in Secret Wars and then Avengers Doom something. Doom. Which I don't know how I feel about Robert Downey Jr. coming back as because I don't know if he's going to play Victor Von Doom or is he going to play a corrupted version of Tony Stark that calls himself Doom.
We'll have to see if it spins out of Multiverse of Madness or not. Well, guys, it's almost quarter after, and it's time for this guy to be going upstairs to watch Weekend
Saturday Night Live.
I think it's almost 10 o'clock for me. I'm going to go and grab a bite to eat. So I think we can wrap it up here. Yeah, good conversation, guys. Good conversation.
Great. Yep.
Yeah. And
hey, Nigel, before we go, I just want to tell you, I had not been listening to the X-Men, The Hidden Years, but I did listen to episodes 10, 11, I believe it was. And I really enjoyed what you and John were doing together. And I'll be along for the ride for the rest of the series.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's,
You guys have been knocking that out of the park.
You work well together.
Yeah. I listened to that. It's funny you should say, but I listened to that last one myself again. I always listen to them anyway, just to see. But I got the feeling when we were actually doing it that that one lacked a certain something. I don't know. It was just my feeling at the time when we were recording. But actually, when I listened to it the other day, I thought, it wasn't too bad after all.
We'll go back and listen to the earlier four episodes or however many are, and I'll try to take my own.
Yeah, well, we were doing them two at a time, apart from the first one. We did because that was a double issue, so that was one. And then we did 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now, so there's five before the one you have listened to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I'm going to call it a night. Nice chatting with you.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Same to you, Kirk. Thanks for coming on. Same with you, Nigel. We're going to, it's nighttime for us, but you're just getting your day started. So
yeah, I'm going to grab something for lunch.
Have a good Sunday.
Thank you. Yeah.
And we will talk again.
Next week.
Soon. Next week. Yeah. Very, very soon.
Yeah. Time for acting time next week.
That's right. Time for story time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for Third Degree Burn, I am Tim Elliott.
And I'm Nigel Spink.
Time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's tutufreaks.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's gottagetburned@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Until next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.